Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fresh Lens Podcast, where we soak both our ideas and our contact lenses in progressive solution. I'm your host, Charlotte Harrington, and I'm here with today's co-host.
Lee Harrington, or Dad.
My dad, yep. Yeah. This is the last direct family member that I can have on here, unless we repeat. So, to get to know me a little better, in case you're new here. I am a 12-year-old white lesbian woman, and I go by she, her pronouns, and I'm also cisgender.
And I'm Charlotte's dad. I'm a middle-aged, middle-class, white guy, and I'm pretty sure my pronouns are just he and him and his.
And we're both Jewish. I didn't add that earlier, but we're both Jewish.
That's right. You're a Jew by birth. I'm a Jew by choice. So, yeah.
We are both. And he Jewish. Did all the things, so he's like really, he really converted too.
Yeah, I did. That was it was 20 some odd years ago now.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. Almost as long as I was Roman Catholic, but not quite.
To start our conversation on today's episode, so as some of you may know and some of you may not know, I am gay, and so is my older brother, one of them, Quinn. And sometimes I talk to my dad about things related to this or, like, just anything related to the community. And yesterday I was talking to him and I asked him, you know, Dad, were there really any, or were there many, if at all, LGBTQ plus people, like, at your high school or middle school or anything? And, like...
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, just the terminology is so different. I think that signals what the answer might be. I certainly had friends in high school who were gay, and I think I'm not sure if they were explicitly out even to me, but it was clear to me that they were, and they lived as openly gay a lifestyle as they could in the 1970s in the suburbs of Boston, which was, I'm sure, terribly limited experience. But between my sisters and I think we certainly had friends who were gay, who maybe a little bit, you know, more in high school and in post high school were able to live their lives more openly, but certainly nothing like the lives that, for example, you know, that to make a pronouncement like you made or like Quinn made.
Right. Well, also, I think it's hard to do that in person. It is to post something on social media, which people didn't have the option to really. So.
Yeah, and that's a double-edged sword. I agree. Social media allows you, to some degree, a level of anonymity, or at least not sort of direct personal interaction in terms of those types of experiences. The flip side is that it broadcasts it to a much broader universe, and doesn't allow you to necessarily control who is hearing your message. So there's a lot of courage that is involved in that too. Instead of tapping someone on the shoulder and saying like, hey, I want you to know this about me, you say to anybody who might happen upon your post on some social media platform, here's who I am. And so there's, you know, I think there's some a degree of courage in that too.
And also, like, just in diversity, like, for example, like, my school still lacks diversity, like, a lot of diversity. Like, it's mostly majority, like 90% white kids, and then a few kids of color. Like, was it the same for you, or, like, more or less? Like, I think it depends on the school, but, like,
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. It's something that your mom and I have struggled with since we decided to move here to Needham, because we both lived a fair amount of our adult lives in inner cities, which, you know, mom in Philadelphia more so, and then when we both lived in Philly, but, you know, more so than me living in Boston, you know, there's more diversity. Certainly Needham is not a very diverse community. And I sometimes think, oh, you know, the world has progressed and we're much further along. And then I look at you guys and I think, like, no, you know, it was pretty much the same for me in the public schools in Braintree in the 70s, 60s and 70s, that there were some students who were bused in from other towns, students of color, but they were an intense minority, you know, maybe three or four black kids in my elementary school, and maybe, you know, I don't know, but if I said 20 out of 700 students at Braintree High School were students of color, and I think a very small minority of those students actually lived in Braintree, so I look back and think, oh, maybe not, there hasn't been that much change or that much progress in some of these outlying suburbs of Boston in the 40 years since I left high school.
Same here. Like, a lot of the kids of color from our school actually live in Boston.
Yeah.
And I'm that slims it down even more from people of color that live in Needham. Like, I'm not even sure there's more than two families of color in our block, like our neighborhood. Like,
oh, no.
Barely anybody. I know there's one family on Laurel.
Yeah. And,
but other than that, like, they're really not at all.
And, you know, that's been a historical issue in this part of the country. You often hear people of color speaking about how racially divided Boston is and what a racist city it is. And I think, like, oh, no, you know, we're liberal and we vote for Democrats, but we, you know, historically have done a terrible job of being integrated and being sort of a place where people are allowed to sort of thrive and live. We do a very good job of sort of marginalizing people, and it's a very white, very white place to live.
I think that's this country in general.
Yeah.
Most of it. A very white place to live.
Yeah, you know, well, I think that's definitely true. But, for example, you know, mom went to school in Philadelphia and lived there for a while, and then we both lived there after we left law school. And I remember thinking when I got there, like, there are a lot of people of color here. And, you know, my dentist was black, and, you know, it was just much more integrated than Boston. And I don't pretend to suggest that Philadelphia has solved its issues of integration and sort of opportunity, but compared to Boston, it was, like, very different. You know, you can spend a lot of time hanging around here and not see a person of color. So, anyway, it's definitely an issue.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's our cat scratching at.
She has something to say. Yeah.
Back there.
Yeah.
She always loves to be here when we're recording to make noise in the background. Yeah. So, another thing, when we do have, my dad and I, these, like, semi-political conversations, something that can come up is not specifically intersectionality, but things that relate to intersectionality. Like, so if you don't know what intersectionality is...
Which I didn't.
Which he didn't, that's right. It's pretty much, like, things that are, you know, related to the way people view you and know you about you, like, from a societal and almost, like a social standpoint in a way. Like, not necessarily, like, oh, she... I mean, I guess it could be anything, really, but not necessarily, like, oh, she's really nice and she's good at math. Like, I guess maybe those could be a part of it. But more, like, our intros... Like, our introductions about, like, about ourselves. Like, that's more what you would think of for intersectionality.
Sure. And you know, we were speaking a little bit about this as we were talking about the show. you know, for me, I when I look at myself as objectively as you can look at yourself, mm-hmm. I am sort of prototype of, oh, I'm a middle-aged, middle-class, white, heterosexual male. And it makes speaking about some of these issues very difficult for me. I certainly, I hesitate because I have no real frame of reference to appreciate the struggles that people have faced who aren't me, or the to sort of figure out the best pathway forward for, you know, racial equality and the ability for people to sort of live their lives who aren't me. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard when your intentions are good and your heart, I think, is in the right place, but I don't speak from a position of knowledge. I speak maybe from a position of empathy, but it's also easy to just sort of retreat into who you are and be like, I'm a good person. I care. And I think one thing about the past several months that has been, helpful for me is that, you realize that you're not alone, that there's lots of people who you think are good people who are struggling with these same issues. And B, you realize that, you know, we all have a lot of work to do on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to taking that introspection and turning it into some positive action, not just putting a Black Lives Matter sign on your front lawn and being like, see, I care, but finding ways to make more meaningful contributions towards change. But, you know, I shave in the mirror every morning and the face that stares back at me is my face and the journey I've traveled and the opportunities I've had because mm-hmm. of who I am, because of
right.
how I was born, because of the color of my skin, because of my sexual orientation, because of my,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I'm a guy, you know, I don't.
Uh-huh.
It's hard not to see those things in yourself.
Mm-hmm. And then there's, for me, like, my biggest point of privilege is being a white person, because that's something that you can see from somebody.
Correct.
Is having lighter skin, which
yes.
is like an immediate privilege. Like,
yeah.
people can't look at me and tell that I'm a lesbian. People can't look at me and tell that I'm Jewish or anything like that.
Sure. Yep.
But that doesn't mean that those are not a part of me and that I don't experience some form of, like, general discrimination or oppression from either of those things.
Of course. I mean, the fact that you're a woman.
Right, and that too, I guess.
Yeah, instantly, it's sort of like, okay, the people... I think even the best-intentioned people make value judgments about other people based on impressions, based on physical impressions or,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the extent you're able to make some socioeconomic value judgments about someone by the way they're dressed or where they live or where they went to school. Yeah, I mean, those things are definitely there. But you're right. There are fewer of those made about you by someone who doesn't know you when they see you walking down the street.
Right,
just like,
exactly.
Oh, there's a girl with glasses, like, I don't know, you know, that's a, you know.
Yeah.
So
obviously people can make assumptions based on things like the way that you're dressed or the way that you, like, if I have, like,
sure.
a Star of David necklace on or whatever,
right.
like, you know.
Right, if you're carrying a challah and
carrying
and reading
uh-huh.
the Torah as you
uh-huh. If you have one of those big menorah things in the front yard
sure.
that some people have.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have that with me when with I walk
the, yeah, the light bulb for every night. Yeah, those are nice.
Yeah. You know, and that's it's another thing. Like, it's not like people can know you and know who you are and everything about you from, like, the, you know, it's not displayed over your head, but, like.
No, but I think that is a sort of fundamental embedded part of white privilege that people don't want to recognize because it's sort of painful and it's like, what do you mean white privilege? I had to get a job and my parents didn't have money, but you get to, doors open for you or value judgments are not made about you, because it's like, oh yeah, that's, you're white, like that.
Right.
That right away you have some sort of pass to the next level of value judgment.
And it's the same thing that Nate and I talked about, like white privilege is less like, if there are three levels, like good, like amazing, treated better than they should be, and treated worse. It's not, it's less that people of color on the middle level or on the top level. It's more like we're good or on the top level, and they're pushed to the bottom level.
Correct.
Which, if you think about it, isn't really a privilege to be treated like a normal person. It should be a necessity. But, like, some people are treated with privilege. Like, it's, you know, better than they should be. That's more of a class thing.
Right, and I think that's part of what's going on now as we start to have more of these dialogues about these very important issues, is that it's very easy to be like, white privilege, you know, I grew up, I was poor, I was lower middle class, or, you know, my parents had to work six jobs to, and it's like, that's not what we're talking about. It's, and so maybe white privilege is a bad label because it suggests some elevated status, like privilege, I wasn't privileged, like, you know, my parents, my parents worked hard and we had an okay life, but we weren't fancy. We weren't privileged in the way it's like, oh yes, you know, where's the you know, fancy cheese and let's go on vacation.
Because that's a rich person.
Correct.
Thing, really.
So I think people use it defensively to be like, I wasn't privileged just because I was white, but that's not the issue. It's not a privilege. It's just an absence of obstacles, an absence of hatred, an absence of...
And the things that they're listing are not, oh my gosh, hello, our cat just jumped onto the bed.
And she's gray, so she's just perfect.
She is very pretty, though. She's like a light gray. She's a lilac gray.
Yeah, okay.
But anyways, stop getting distracted by Penny, yeah. I'm trying to think of what I was saying. Oh, and a lot of things that they list, like, of their struggles have to do with class and not with their race.
Correct.
Which is disregarding, like, the entire point of white privilege, really. Right.
You could... I'm sure there are probably studies done, or people smarter than me have thought about these things, but I'm sure you could take a white person, which is crazy, and a black person, mm-hmm. From the same sort of socioeconomic strata, and you'd see that there were other obstacles faced by someone who's got darker skin than their counterparts with lighter skin.
A connection that I immediately make is the two things that you can see from a person right away that the most privileged come from can be, like, race or gender.
Yeah.
And those are the two social constructs, usually, of the things of intersectionality, which, you know, kind of says a lot, like, oh, society came up with these things. It was probably to move people apart and to put them against each other.
Of course.
But they don't. Gender and race do not exist. They don't.
That's right. I saw something not that long ago. There's someone said, you know, there are no white people in the Bible, and I was like, well, what does that mean? But it's because there was no one thought of things like race, like you were just saying, race is just a total construct. It's like, let's invent this thing to categorize people and create advantage and disadvantage.
Well, also because, like, people, if they were still here and they were to be judged off of the social construct of race, they also wouldn't be white because they're from the Middle East. And, like, white Jesus, like a symbol of white supremacy. I think that's a different conversation,
though. I agree, except I feel like they talk about, like, Romans and people like that in the Bible. I'm sure some of them were slightly lighter skin.
White people, but, like, it doesn't matter.
It's all skin color. Exactly. Like, you and I don't even have the same skin color. And no, we're made...
And you have more... Your skin is more, like, red and has tints. Like, when you make...
Hey, wait a minute.
When you make...
I'm Irish.
When you make a paint shade to match your skin tone, and it's for a white person, it is not just white paint.
And for a black person, more.
Not just black paint.
No, it's
for
silly. It's
somebody that's Southwest or just West or Asian or, like, Middle Eastern, sure. Like, you don't put just brown. Like, even though that's, like, they're all different skin colors, because it, like,
yeah.
The best way I've seen it explained is, like, when Bill and I explained it and how it's, like,
I saw that was really
about,
good.
Like, where you're from, really. Like, it literally right. has no value to who you are as a person. And if you know this because people judge people based off of them being black, not off of their skin being... I mean, colorism is a different thing. But, like, if somebody looks, if somebody is white passing, but you know they're black, they're still going to be treated differently because it's the idea, not the actual.
Yeah, it's all the, it's all just nonsense. It's all just such a made up. It's a construct to sort of categorize and marginalize people. That's all it is.
Exactly. And unfortunately, they knew, they did that, and they knew what to do based on how they know people work, and it worked.
And by they, we mean old white guys.
And, yeah, and people that are in places of power. And rich. Rich, because that's super important. And that's a whole nother thing, though, with classism and stuff.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. So, another thing.
Yeah.
So, recently, I decided I'm going to start being vegan.
Mm.
So that's
what a pain in the ass that is for everybody else.
I know. And there is, I'm not really sure where to start this. There are so many things that I could start this with.
Yeah.
Thing I'm going to start with is reasons, because that will connect to later. So I decided to be vegan because I know how terrible it is for the environment to eat meat and dairy because of the mass producing and just the killing off of animals.
We're not tackling any small issues here, right?
No.
We're not talking about sports or...
No.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm also extremely passionate, even though I'm not as vocal about it, for animal rights and stuff. And, like, I have conversations with my other vegan friend, Annabelle, the only other vegan person my age that I know. Because it's hard for people to be vegan, which is a whole other thing.
Yes.
I think that it would be, when you're vegan, you have to choose your foods carefully anyway, so it would be easier for me to find foods that would be healthier. Even though I'm not really sure currently about the word healthy, because I feel like it can be used against people. Like, it's sort of like it's your own thing, and like it's a difficult word to really know the true meaning of, unless it's like for yourself directly. But again, and so that's pretty much why I decided to go vegan. And you know, as we said a few times already, even just talking about this, it's expensive and difficult to be vegan. And this leads me into this. So there is this account with this older white woman on TikTok, straight woman, who has, you know, who is vegan, that vegan teacher, because she's like a sixth grade teacher. And she like tries to force people to be vegan and says that there's like no excuses and such, and like shames people for not being completely vegan. Which is weird, because she also abuses her dogs by not giving them what they need. But anyways, wow. I digress.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that I agree with some of the things that she says on the standpoint of, like, why it's better to be vegan for environmental reasons or for whatever the reason is. But the way that she does it is just not good, because it's so extremely privileged, and like she talks about being so openly accepting, and she like constantly compares black people to animals and stuff, which is
what,
like, she's like, well, if you guys are so against black people being killed, what is it about animals being killed? Like,
oh, just... I see what you're saying. Well, that's offensive.
That's like the first thing, but there are like worse things in that, being like, well, they're pretty much at like the same intelligence level.
What?
Yeah, I feel like I'm pretty sure she deleted that video.
See, I wouldn't be
like,
vegan.
She said that, like, no, exactly, and that's the thing. Like, that's why people don't, like, you're doing the opposite of what you want to do, because you're making people not want to be a part of that community and not want to try and make an effort to do that, because you're pushing them
away. I mean, this individual, I have not had the pleasure of viewing any of these TikTok posts, but you know, there's always going to be some people who are just crazy. I mean, that's probably not the right thing, but you know, that's just she's just off, you know, that's just, you know, inappropriate on so many levels.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that it aside from offending people and sounding kind of hateful, if it puts people off what otherwise is probably a good path, and like a path that you want to pursue, you know, that's just terrible, but there are always those people, you know, you'll find them at the fringes of every movement, even movements that generally have a positive message that just sort of like, they just don't get it. And it's also hard because something like being vegan, it's one of those things that intellectually I know it's the right thing to do.
Uh-huh.
Like, I love animals, and I've often said, like, if I had to make my own meat or, you know, procure my own chicken or even catch my own fish, frankly, I'd be like, I'd be a vegetarian or because I couldn't do it. I couldn't, uh-huh, like, kill a cow so I could have a hamburger, but I don't have any problem picking up a package of hamburger from the supermarket or going to McDonald's and getting a quarter pounder. So,
mm-hmm,
And then the massive implications for the environment that are associated with, you know, raising cattle and all those things. Like, it's just, it's
uh-huh,
terrible. Like, and there's like, any right, number of really, really good reasons not to live a non-vegan or vegetarian lifestyle. But,
uh-huh. And I think that that's
but
just
I'm a
unfair.
Middle-class white guy, so.
But there, that's just, there's so many reasons why it's not okay, not only with the racism and need and the
dog. Oh my god,
abuse.
Well, that woman just sounds like she's not a nice person, but.
Shouldn't be a teacher either, really.
She's a teacher?
Yeah.
In Needham? No, I'm okay.
No. Can my cat is trying to bite me. Go away. I love you, but
no,
be aggressive.
Just,
yeah. Anyways, but I just think that's like, you know, telling somebody, like, people who are, like, directly have health issues that they're bad people because they literally would hurt themselves.
Yeah.
Trying to do that and, like, trying to be vegan or vegetarian. Some people, like, need that. Like, my friend, she, like, has some, I don't know exactly what it is, but, like, if she were to try and do that, like, she would hurt herself. Like, it's not something that everybody can do. And also,
sure,
people are not in positions of, with money-wise, to get,
yep,
vegan,
sure,
food, especially if they're living in a family or a group of people where some people are vegan, some people aren't. They have to get double the supplies and the replacements and stuff. What's good is that there are replacements,
right,
nowadays.
Yeah,
and like,
some of those decisions are definitely either made easier or more difficult by resources and
mm-hmm,
and, you know, money and social status and yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's just unfair to think like that. Like, to think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I, you know, we have this discussion often when we start talking about these very weighty issues, these very important issues, social issues and issues of identity and issues and political issues, that, you know, it's hard. There's no one size fits all for everybody. That you know, it's, life is incredibly complicated. Like, every person's life is incredibly complicated, and there's no way to sort of devise a path for a group of people to say, oh, this is, you know, this is the right way for you to live. It's like, you can't, you know, it's very hard.
Mm-hmm. It's
hard.
It's unfair, and it's like, it's just not right,
yeah,
morally, and like, to call out people for what you think might be something that's morally unjust, and then also in turn do something that's morally unjust.
Well,
that's just hypocritical,
that person in particular. And you know, it's also hard because if it dissuades someone from following a path that might be better for them in terms of their mental or physical health, or
mm-hmm,
you know, in terms of you know, even person by person, you know, reducing the negative impact of things on the planet, which, you know, we haven't even talked about that, which we probably shouldn't, because I don't know anything about global warming other than the fact that I know it's real and I know it's bad, but
uh-huh,
you know, we all sort of at some level turn a blind eye to those things when we really should be focusing on them intently, because it affects every single person, gay, straight, black, white, man, woman, old, young. Like,
My prediction is that at some point, everybody who can be vegan is going to have to be vegan, because we've done so much damage to the environment that people are going to have to do it,
right,
to be better, and,
yeah,
you know.
And people aren't going to count their steps because it's like a cool thing to do. It's going to be because you can't drive and you can't ride a bus or you can't ride in a plane because
right,
we can't burn any more fossil fuel, or else we're all going to die in a
fireball. Bill Nye said, not, like, I'm pretty sure he said, it would be easy to make that switch. And no, it's not going to be free. Nothing is free. You guys are the ones who like capitalism, so, like, nothing is free. That's not how anything works. It would be easy to switch to, like, make it environmentally safe, like, with cars, like, to stop with our terrible fossil fuel, whatever. Like,
no, I'm terrible. I feel so bad.
No, it's a, it's
burning fossil fuel for decades. I'm such a bad person.
Well, I mean, it's good because you take the train to work, which is...
Yeah, but even that, like, I have to say, you know, I know we're skipping all over the place, but I do hope that one silver lining of the pandemic is that it makes people realize, like, you know, you don't have to fly in a plane or drive in a car or ride in a train to, like, be productive. Like, maybe we can find a better way to be, you know, do the things that we consider part of our obligations as members of a capitalist society without, you know, expending resources that we don't have to expend that just continue to do damage to our planet.
Yeah, and...
And I don't really care. I'm going to be gone in a couple of decades. Like, you're going to be here for a while. Like, you should care more than me. Don't say
that. And also, like, we don't need global warming because it snows sometimes in the north, Trump, because he said that.
Well, yeah, I think we can agree that we should discount pretty much anything he says by, like, 90%.
I don't think he said a single thing that I agree with. Maybe he said the word hello once.
Yeah,
but I don't think he said anything. But that's another discussion. We keep saying that. We keep getting off track. Yeah. But, you know, and also, like, oh, I was going to say something. I forgot what I was going to say.
That's good. That means that your brain's working overtime. It's better to...
Is it? Definitely.
Of course. Yeah, if you're thinking of a million things that you want to say and your mind gets sidetracked, that means you're thinking instead of just saying, like, I like food. I like food, too. We have so much in common.
People start a conversation
that
way where people are like, oh, let's talk. Let's start a conversation. Like, you can't make yourself start a conversation because you're going to... You can't.
No.
Like, you have to start it naturally for, like, because you're... subconscious, like, it's not gonna let
you can have some sort of, you know, tools in your tool bag to start conversations that you learn from years of thinking, like, how am I going to start a conversation with this person. But you're right, the best conversations are the ones that are organic, that you just sort of you find some common ground or you find some non-common ground and have a conversation with somebody. So can I ask you a question? How are you feeling about going back to school or not going back to school or whatever it is that you're going to be doing in a couple of weeks?
I don't understand the logic of this. Like, nothing has changed. We know this. Nothing has changed.
In terms of the coronavirus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So why were we taking all that time off at the beginning, but now all of a sudden we're like, oh, we can go for some of the time. Like, I know that we're more prepared, but, like, are we really? Like, it's been a few months. Like, why? Like, what's changed? Like, what makes it suddenly more safe? I mean, I think I'm gonna be fine, but, like, I also, it's gonna be hard in terms of number of staff, because we're gonna have to do, like, double classes, since they're gonna be the online group for a class, because they wouldn't be able to do it at the same time, which concerns me. And it's gonna be so difficult for the teachers to do all of this and everything. That's, like, it's a lot. And some teachers, like, are like, we can't do this. Like, we're not going to do this. Like, I doubt that the hybrid or going to school is going to last. Like, I think that at some point they're going to switch back to full remote for everybody. Like, I just, there's no way.
I am inclined to agree with you. I'm inclined to think that the very same conditions that drove us all underground in March still exist.
So exactly.
I don't see what...
Hand sanitizer is still the same. Toilet paper amounts are better because people are now realizing that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, what? Also, like, of all things, like, why toilet paper? Like, why do people think that that's what they were going to need? Like, there's no something in the virus that have to do with toilet
something
paper.
Something very sort of culturally subconscious about that to us.
It's like, it's not a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. It's like toilet paper and ramen noodles.
It's not that one Will Smith movie where everybody gets a virus where they turn into a zombie, and you know that one?
Oh, yeah, that's a good movie.
It's not
I am Legend.
Yeah. I like that one. It's, It's not just a virus. It's a virus that has no symptoms that are related to toilet paper. Like, maybe if you were to get a lot of something, get a lot of a lot of disinfectant. People already did hand sanitizer. That makes sense. But don't take a mass amount of things, especially if you're in a place where you'll be safe and you'll be quarantining.
Yeah.
Let those supplies go to people who really need them, who cannot, you know, follow these safety measures.
Yeah.
But still get stuff to keep you safe, because that's going to keep everybody else safe. And wear a mask.
Yeah, it's not that hard. I don't really.
It's been proven so many times over that it does not take down your oxygen levels. You are just annoying.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you can't wear a lace mask from Etsy because it has holes in it.
They look nice, though.
They do look nice. Put them over a solid white mask and take your lace mask and put it over, so it can still look nice, but it's still working.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something.
We probably have to. Penny, can you not? She's.
I know we probably have to wrap up soon, but you know, you mentioned the impact of the return to school on teachers, and that's the part of it that I think about you and Quinn, especially because you're mine and part of my family, and I, you know, I want you to be safe, so that's my paramount concern. But I just feel like everyone's just looking at the teachers like, what do you think? How's this going to work? We're not going to give you any resources. You're going to have to teach remotely and in person and some hybrid. And by the way, we're not going to pay you anymore. Like,
at least they don't have to buy the supplies for the kids anymore. They do for the classroom for when people are there, but not as much, right?
I guess, but it's obscene. I wish I could remember.
Get that money on tissue boxes, everybody.
I wish I could remember the tweet I saw today, but I think it was something like, the Pentagon spends more in 3 seconds than we pay all of the teachers in our country combined for like a year.
Yeah, it's that thing I always talk about when they spent $3 trillion on like military stuff, and that was enough to end world hunger and end student loan debt and raise the minimum wage and still have like $1 billion left over, which thinking about that just like fills me with rage. Like, I can't talk about it for too long because I'm gonna get super angry, but like, that is so frustrating. Why do we spend money on killing people and not on helping people live? Like, why?
Yeah, I wrestled with that argument my entire life. You know, when I was your age, it was right during the middle of the Vietnam War, and it used to be broadcast on the TV every night, and I never had conversations like this with my parents, although I know my parents were, you know, good, kind people, and their hearts in the right place. But, you know, you couldn't avoid it and just think, like, what are we doing? Like, what has ever been solved by one group of people killing members of another group of people? It's crazy.
It's another dead person. More space in graveyards. Like,
yeah, it's the worst way to sort of try and deal with.
I don't care what you did. I don't care who you are. Like, I don't think that you deserve to die. Because even if you did something that's so bad, you should deserve to live with that. Dying is like the easy way out, and like, people don't deserve to die no matter what they did.
Yeah. Dying is easy.
Governing is harder. Anti-death. dying is easy, young man. Living is harder.
That's what
Why
it
are
is.
You telling me this? Yeah. I'm being honest.
Yeah.
So, that actually is a perfect segue into our last thing for today.
Okay.
So, if you know either of us, you know that we are diehard Hamilton fans.
We are, yeah.
And we're also both theater kids.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure that this was something that you know something about, at least.
Yeah.
There are a lot of stigmas around men in theater, and like, oh, if you do theater, you're gay. You know, and like, oh, only women should do this or like or that, or no, you know, representation. Like, it just so, you know, that.
Oh yeah, you know, this somewhat brings us almost back full circle when you were talking earlier about, you know, did I know people when I was growing up who were gay, and sort of the difference between the LGBTQ community now and, you know, gay and lesbian kids when I was in high school. And yeah, I was in musical theater since I was in middle school and all through high school. And I definitely got a ton of grief from people, you know, many of whom I met later when I was in a band and all these things, and we're like, hey, man. And I was just like, you know what? You're a jerk. Like,
it's always those people who, it's always the people who peak in high school.
Yeah, that's, like, that's exactly right. While they're pumping gas in my, but I certainly, there were definitely like, I had, both directors and theater teachers in high school who I, like, I came later to know that they were gay, even though I sort of assumed they were, but like, then I, when I get to know them as adults, I knew they were gay. And I had friends who in high school who, as I said, you know, as I continued to grow my relationship with them, came to know that they were gay. And, but, you know, it was such a stigma, and it's like,
it's like contributing to gender stereotypes.
Yeah. And also, like, people saying to me, people like, you know, other kids in high school, like, You're in theater. You're the F word. You're in theater. You're gay.
Which is, and I'm like, don't call people slurs.
And also, I'm kind of like, that's supposed to be an insult. Like, this is my friend who is gay, and like, he's a much nicer person than you.
Oh,
like,
my gosh, exactly.
Like, I don't take that as an insult. Like, you're just,
it's not an insult. It's just annoying.
Yeah, it's just like, it shows.
That's like looking at this pillow and be like, you're a pillow.
Yeah, it's like,
you're a pillow.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Thanks.
The worst,
I know.
The last thing in the world I want to be is a pillow. It's like, okay. Like, yeah, I know it, but it's that type of
better than, like, being an insecure straight person. I'd rather be a confident gay person than an insecure straight person.
That kind
person.
Of ignorant hatred that is just based on nothing but your own insecurities and fears and irrationality. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, you know, when speaking about you and Quinn, like, those are the things that I'm trying to process because my overriding concern of. Is for you as your parent to think, like, I just want you to have a happy life. I want you to never encounter the idiot kids that I encountered when I was a kid who, like, would say terrible things like that. And
I don't really, I'm not going to care, but, like, I think everybody cared a little bit.
Of course. Like, you just don't want to feel like you're being, like, picked on or judged or like,
It makes me more angry than upset.
That's right. You just,
like,
don't want to deal with.
It just makes me angry. Like,
you just don't want to have, like, stupid people in your life, even on the margins.
Watch
so.
Yourself. I literally, if somebody does that to somebody, especially if they're not me, like, I might hit them. Like, I literally would be so angry. I might get in trouble for that, but.
Well, you wouldn't get in trouble here.
Like, no, I wouldn't get in trouble here.
I think every once in a while, I think someone deserves a punch in the nose.
But. And, you know, schools care more about if I were to punch somebody than they do if they called me the F-slur.
Of course. Which is just another...
That's a conversation.
Another indicator of how far we have not come.
We have more savior complexes and more people pretending to know what they're talking about. Because they don't want... Because they know that people will come for them.
yeah.
The same way that, like, if I were to post something, or if I were to go to school in, like, masculine clothing, which is, like, clothing that I usually like. Like,
I know you wear half my clothes.
I know. People wouldn't say anything negative, but they definitely wouldn't say anything as positive as they would if I were to dress feminine, because they know they can't get away with saying it, something like that. But
which is just, like, again, going back to what we were sort of talking about earlier, you know, I look back and think of some of the people that I sort of witnessed from my place of privilege as a young white kid. And, you know, I remember Martin Luther King. I remember Angela Davis. I remember seeing, the Black Panthers on TV. I remember all of these things that, as a young man, I was thinking, like, wow, these are incredible, like, important social changes that are going on. Like, it all just seems so, like, beyond me and out of control. And then I think, like, oh, God, have we, like, moved the needle at all? And that was, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. And it's just like, I hope that...
We've changed the way that people talk about it, not the way that people act on the way that they
I just
say
hope that we're able to take some of the momentum from this horrible year and push things further down the road somehow for everybody. I hope that we're all...
And also, it should not take people dying for us to realize that there's something wrong. It's still that people not believe that something's wrong. Like, really? That's ridiculous. People should not have to die for you to realize that there's racism in the world.
I think that's a minimal threshold.
And I think that if you don't agree with that, like, that sounds like a problem. Like,
yeah, I would agree with you that should not be the barometer.
And, you know, we shouldn't... And now, I always see people, like, people always say, like, with Hamilton, they're like, oh... You know, stan, which means, like, really, like, heavily support and, like, obsess over, pretty much. Lawrence and Lafayette, the real life people, because they didn't have slaves. Because they didn't have slaves? That's your standard? Like,
yeah.
That might be a little bit low, you guys. The bar is, like, on the floor.
Right.
No, the bar doesn't even exist anymore.
The bar is, like, yeah, it's a burning, smoldering pit of
the bar is
crap.
Minecraft nether.
I know, and that's a huge topic for a huge another conversation, or many conversations. That whole, you know, the fundamental ethos of our wonderful country, but...
And I also don't want, like, I don't think that, I think that there are a lot of great parts to living in America. I think it's a privilege to live in this country. Like, I think it's a good country, but there, but I, like, hate everything about the way that it treats people who aren't privileged. And, like, the way that it, you know, slips things under the rug. Like, it needs a lot of change, but we're in a good place for starting, I think.
Well, I hope you're right. I want to believe that you're right. I want to believe that, like, I look at you and I look at Quinn, I look at Nate, and I feel like there's hope for this generation that you will carry the torch further than certainly I did. I mean, my God, I look at you guys and I'm embarrassed at how I sort of walked through my life dealing with my own things, believing like, oh, you're a good person. It's like, and I am a good person, but like, that's not enough. Like, you need to be... You need to pick up a brick. You need to pick up a pen. You need to write a song. You need to march shoulder to shoulder with people. And I see you guys doing that. It makes me really, really proud. So.
Yeah. And it's good if you are at that good person standard, but it would be great if you could try and do something to at least try and maintain a consistent good person status.
It's not enough to be good. It's taking that feeling of goodness and doing something with it.
And you don't have to be like, great or amazing. You just have to be extra good. You have to, like, maintain your goodness.
Right. And you have to be, more than anything, you have to be anti-bad. Like, it's going to be good. Like, the thing that I've seen recently is, like, you need to be proactively not bad. It's not enough to be, you know, I'm not prejudiced. You have to be anti-racist. It's not enough to be like, what?
Exactly, because if you're not supporting anything, then you're passively racist.
If you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem.
There's no in between.
Yes.
And that's pretty much the standard now for people. Be anti-bad and don't own slaves.
Yes.
That's the standard now.
I would say that, yeah.
And don't beat women. That's pretty much the standard.
And don't hate
Or I would never drug girls drink at a party. Oh my gosh, King. Excuse me. What? I would not do something that's illegal. I wouldn't be a pedophile. I wouldn't be part of sex trafficking. Like, yeah. Great. I'm so glad that you aren't a terrible person. Like, right. Thanks for telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Anyways, for the third time today,
yes.
I digress.
Yes, you were digressing. I thought we were so close to wrapping up on a really sort of neat, putting a neat ribbon on it, but. It's been awesome talking to you. I'm super proud of you, always.
I think that a good way to end, I think that's the way we're going to end this. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Yep.
And that's it for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we will see you next time on the Fresh Lens Podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.